Good morning.
Good
morning. Welcome to This Week in Science, Kirsten Light Edition. I am the Minion co-host, Justin, and I've got we've got another co-host in studio today, Eric.
Hello.
And we're getting ready to bring you some of the science news from this week. We still have our caller. We have a caller before the show even starts to... We scared him away.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they were trying to call for something else.
Yeah. I just saw that the intro music came on, and suddenly the phone lit up. I'm like, wow, you guys have a lot of callers. That's impressive.
From the second we play our intro music, it's all phone calls through the whole hour. Kirsten is, in case anybody's wondering or worrying about her, she's fine. She's off working for the NSA, some sort of project about spying birds, some kind of new technology. I'm probably not supposed to be talking about this, but apparently we're going to have birds spying on foreign nations instead of all those pesky satellites and all that technology.
You know, if we could just ship out all the crows that we get in the winter to other countries, I fully support that.
Yeah, they've been... What was it, last week or the week before that, there was a story we were doing about exploding toads where crows were...
Oh, yeah.
Toads would puff themselves up to try to look bigger and defend themselves, and the crows would come along and pop them.
Yeah, what was it like? The crows were, like, surgically removing the kidneys or something like that so they'd keep expanding?
All the tasty bits.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, we're here in studio today, so go ahead and give us a call at 752-2777. Or you can check out This Week in Science on the internet. Just Google This Week in Science, and we'll be right there at the top. We've got some robot domination stories all over the place here. We have tons and tons of robot domination. In case any of you aren't worried about robots taking over the Earth, the time to start worrying is coming. They are down to the semi-finalists in the Desert Robot Race. Down from 40 to the last, let's see. No, they're down to the first 40.
Okay, yeah. Down that sounds from, like, 120 or something like that?
Yeah, there's tons of entries this time. They've whittled it down to 40, and there's going to be another, they're going to go down to 20, who are actually going to run the race in October. But this is a lot more challenging a course than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, they throw a lot of curveballs in there.
Yeah, like, the last year's winner was this giant Humvee, right? Yeah. And it made it 7.5 miles before crashing.
And it was crazy, because it's like, you think, 7.5 miles, all right, and it was probably, like, some little ravine it got to and it stopped. And it was actually, like, switchbacks going up a mountain. And I guess it had some sensor that detected it was too close to the edge. So it said, I'm just going to kind of hang out here, and you guys can come and pick me up whenever.
Oh, should get rid of the safety mechanism.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, you know, one of the coolest things about this race is, you know, you were talking about robot domination. This is the only race I know of where they have to have, like, a self-destruct switch kind of thing, like, that, you know, automatically shuts down the racer.
Really?
Yeah, so that, like, remotely the military or whoever's monitoring can say, oh, this guy's out of bounds, you know, and kill it.
Wow, and I bet they're doing all kinds of, because they've upped the dollar amount if you win. It was $1 million, now it's $2 million this year. But I bet you the military's out there also trying to make sure that nobody cheats.
Oh yeah, I'm totally sure.
Because it'd be great to, you know, because the robots have to be completely autonomous. I mean, they have to use sensors to recognize the course and GPS to plot their movements. But I can see, like, you know. Yeah, okay, you got one kid in there, you know, who's got a small enough brother who throws him into the middle of the robot.
Totally.
Well, and little wheels.
Some of the guys who are programming these, you know, things and building the project, like, they're crazy about some of the things they do. Like, there was this project a contest at one of the hacker conventions in Vegas to see who could get, like, the farthest Wi-Fi signal. And some group had, like, this crazy home-built antenna dish and stuff like that. And I think they got it, like, 30 miles.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, somebody out there is thinking, wait.
Well, we've got a caller. So let's go ahead and pick up here. Good morning, caller. You're on the air with This Week in Science.
Oh, wow. It's time for my weekly IQ elevation session. Make me smart, brainiacs.
That's what we're working on. That's why I'm here.
Okay. That's why I get myself plugged in every Tuesday morning at 8:30.
Excellent.
And I forgot that Kristen wasn't going to be there, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. This Week in Science lost its scientist. Wait, are you a scientist?
Well, engineer.
Oh, okay, engineer. That's close enough.
It's got an E in the title, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
I'm just a delusional. I have nothing to do with the realm of science.
They're scientists.
Yeah, actually, they claim to be.
Yeah. That's okay. Everybody's delusional and everybody's a scientist.
This is true.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, keep up the good works, Brainiac.
Oh, thank you.
Later.
Wow. Just a feel-good call.
Wow, that's pretty... That's nice. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I'm jazzed right now. So, yeah, this unmanned robot project, this year... last year's winner went 7.5 miles. This year, it's the first robot to make it across 150 miles of desert between Los Angeles and Las Vegas in less than 10 hours.
You know, I think there's something nice about the fact that the end point of this robot domination race is Vegas. I mean, you know, do you think the military is maybe prepping Vegas for a fall here?
Oh, wow. Well, wasn't it, Six String Samurai, the U.S. headquarters moved to Vegas?
Nice.
Yeah, but this is all being put on by the Pentagon, which I kind of like the idea of the Pentagon using sort of prize money. I mean, $2 million.
No, yeah, yeah.
Because if they tried to build one of these things, it would be billions of dollars going down a sinkhole.
Yeah, so, and like 6 years later, they're like, well, this thing can kill, but it can't move.
So the thing is, we must really not be intending to use this for military means, because it wouldn't be this public.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, at the same time, DARPA has done a lot of things that are pretty public, and then afterwards, you know, like, the military's gotten
all
a lot of abuse out of it.
All the scientists involved disappear.
No. Yeah. Those are the other projects.
Feel a little scared. There's some high school kids actually have entered this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I wish my high school had done something like that.
Yeah, my high school didn't. Actually, no, somebody in my high school did build a hovercraft.
That's pretty cool.
That was pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this group, I guess, like, it's a Bay Area, what, Palos Verdes or something like that. And I saw some article on them, and one of the local car dealerships where they are donated a car, like Acura or something like that.
Oh, nice.
And so they've just got some, like, donated SUV that's, you know, like, high-end SUV, and then they've just wired it crazy and sending it out into the desert. And, you know, there's some great mix of, like, you know, yuppie cars and high school kids and, you know, military. It's just, it's like an 80s movie.
It is. It totally is. But this is, I mean, this is, they got to be at a good pace, too. I understand the distance, and then there's switchbacks involved and obstacles involved. But to get to Vegas in 10 hours,
yeah,
you still got to be going at a pretty good clip.
Yeah, the Stanford.
Those obstacles.
The Stanford vehicle, I remember reading something on it, and they said it was going 55 kilometers an hour.
Wow.
You know, while it's just, you know, and I think they said that was like its median pace or something like that. So, you know, hits a straightaway. I don't know if it's got some sort of governor on it or what, but. Yeah. You know, that's a good clip.
Now, 55 kilometers. Just,
yeah.
Because now everybody knows kilometers.
Yeah,
That's
what,
the same 40? As 55,000 meters, or approximately.
Yeah.
55,000 meters.
Yeah, like. I'm guessing, like, what, 40 miles an hour or something like that?
Yeah. So along that same robot domination, military, unmanned vehicle frame of mind, the Navy, not to be outdone, is sending its underwater robot named Spray back out for another trip. It went one way across the Gulf Stream, unmanned, and is now trying to go down the Gulf Stream back up again.
So this is all underwater?
Well, mostly underwater. It actually goes down to quite a depth, about 1,000 meters, or 3,300 feet, three times a day. It makes these deep plunges down, and it comes back up and gets GPS signal,
all right.
And then it can redirect itself to try to get back on course or what have
you. Yeah.
But it's taking readings also. It's also transmitting. It's got all kinds of sensors to monitor ocean temperature and different organic sensors on board as well. But I'm starting to get – it's starting to make me nervous. All this unmanned military use, you know?
When you were saying this, you know, autonomous thing, swimming underwater, surfacing occasionally, I'm thinking, you know, in a couple of years, these things are going to start beaching.
Somebody's going to be playing with a 30-mile radius Wi-Fi signal and just bring a whole bunch of them up to the shore.
Oh, we have no idea how this happened. And we didn't use dolphins in making these.
There were no dolphins harmed in this experiment, which is nice because you don't want to harm dolphins.
Yeah.
They're too clever.
Yeah. You know, I personally, I'd much rather see these autonomous vehicles and some of the, like, I don't know, like the Navy's trained dolphins as like mine hunters before.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I mean, you know, I'm all for dolphin employment and that, but I guess I'd rather see robots doing that. So, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that bothers me about all this still is the autonomous military where you don't have an eyeball there for somebody with a conscience to go, you know, maybe that's not the target.
Yeah, totally.
Those look shorter than, like, guerrilla warriors.
Yeah.
They might be kids.
Yeah.
I should probably not hit the button that blows them up. And like, with the robot race in the desert, it wouldn't bother me at all if it was the Department of Transportation. Like, you know, why not even hide it that way? Just for my benefit, just make that part of the Department of Transportation, unmanned vehicles. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I'm looking to be able to get in my car, tell it to take me to the bar, and when I come out of the bar, it drives me home.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great. I'd be all for that.
Yeah, but, you know, the downside to that is, you know, let's say you're completely sober in your car. Hey, you know, your breath smells a little funny. I don't think you're safe to drive. I'm going to take over here. And
Let it, though. No, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Or if you could switch seats with it real quick.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Take over.
We're getting pulled over. Okay. You're driving.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, that would be bad. You have a robot domination story today.
Yeah, so you were saying you didn't want it to be all robots. Exactly. So this is kind of like the medium point. Not quite robot, but kind of robot. So this group at UC California Irvine, graduate student there has designed a roach car. It's basically a little robot that is roach guided. And when I first read this, I thought, oh, you know, he's ripped the brain out of a roach and he's somehow figured out how to program the roach brain and use that to control. No, nothing like that.
Not that sexy.
Yeah, no, well, I don't know. Maybe not that sexy, maybe sexier. It's hard to say what he's done. Like, so what the guy's done is he's taken a trackball. He's taken one of those giant hissing cockroaches, and those things are like the size of a mouse.
Yeah.
And then he's replaced the ball on a trackball with a ping pong, so it's light enough for the roach to move it. And then he's put like a light cap over the roach's eyes so they can fool the roach. Now, so he's actually talking, like when the grad student talks about it, he says, well, you know how roaches run away from the light? Like you turn on the light and they scurry away. Well, that's what this research is based on. And as soon as the researcher can say that, you know it's cool science.
Yeah.
And what they do is they've got like a proximity detector on this little robot. And whenever it gets close enough to a wall, the light on the little light cap closest to the wall lights up. And they're trying to get the roach to scurry away from
the other direction.
Yeah. And
that's brilliant.
The roach is just running on top of the trackball. And that's what guides this robot around.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's good science dollars there.
Yeah. Especially if they could attach bums to the roach. No.
You know, I don't even want to think about what the roach would think is like a good target to bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, kitchen counters everywhere getting blowed up.
Totally. Actually, you know, kind of following on other science that's related to this, I remember there was a story I found last night when I was looking at this. Somebody's made a tennis racket that where the wires on the racket are replaced with highly charged wires. And this is like a thing for kids to play around with, and it zaps bugs. When they wave it around. So, you know, in case the roach here gets out of control, you just wave your, you know, electrified tennis racket around and zap the bug.
Like a big old electrocutionary fly swatter.
Exactly.
I want one.
Yeah, I mean,
I totally want one.
Apparently it's illegal in Australia, though. So, you know, can't do that there where they have all the bugs. But
although the truth about, like, if you ever want to really get rid of insects, The key is one of those electronic zappers, like the zapper.
Yeah.
But don't get it for yourself. Get it for the neighbor across the street. Because apparently they actually attract more insects to the area than they can kill.
Well, and it's worse than that, too. So when I was looking at the bug zapper thing last night, I came across a related article, and it said those outdoor zappers.
Yeah.
Apparently, when they zap the bugs explode with so much force. If the bugs have any sort of bacteria or whatever in them that's like not so good, it gets spread out in like a 6-foot radius.
Nice.
So like there's this radius of contamination around those things.
Oh, but it might still be worth it because they're fun.
Yeah, well, like you said, you know, as long as the neighbor's doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Just get one for your neighbor. They'll think it's a great gift.
Yeah.
It'll bring all the bugs to their side of the street and you'll be cool.
You know, constantly from next door, you're like, nice.
All right. Well, hey, when is a drug for sick people too dangerous? Is it when it's a Celebrex, Bextra, or Vioxx COX-2 inhibitor that can give you a heart attack? Or is it one that gives you the munchies? Which would you say is less applicable to making you feel better and be healthy.
Oh, man.
Can you believe that? Have you heard about this story?
No.
Okay. The Supreme Court ruled that medical marijuana cannot be protected from federal law.
You know, I did read that last night. I don't get it.
It was a 6-3 decision. That two of the justices that voted against continuing to make it prosecutable by under federal statutes, this is basically four states that have medical marijuana law. Well, the two of the three had cancer before, so you can kind of see a little bit of a slant. Like people who know how bad a really debilitating disease is are a lot more empathetic to something as simple as marijuana being used to treat symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing too. Like the thing that I couldn't get my brain around is that, like, the federal government, as far as, you know, when it comes to laws, they have the power to set laws that govern, you know, anything that relates to interstate commerce. They can pass
a
law.
Right.
But like what this came out of was like the two ladies in California, right, who were growing it in their own backyard and got arrested.
They got raided by federal agents for their 6-plant crop.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's a couple weeks supply.
Yeah. I'm still.
That's a lot of plants.
Yeah. And I still haven't figured out how the whole interstate commerce thing comes in.
Well, because technically, Congress is not supposed to have any laws that interfere with the state's medical thingamadilly something.
Right,
marijuana can be transported across state lines and is, I don't know, it's something goofy. It's some way that it's kind of like a loophole that they're using to prosecute medical marijuana. Now, 99% of these, though, are still only going to be prosecuted by states. And a lot of state representatives from California and other states that have medical marijuana laws have been coming out and telling people, you know, don't worry, you're not going to start getting prosecuted all of a sudden for this. This is still going to be handled at the state level. You're still going to be protected unless you get busted by the feds.
Huh.
Right.
That's kind of like, you know, some reassurance.
Some reassurance. And this, you know, there's a whole lot of sideways talk on this. This was a Bush administration. It's being touted as a Bush administration hard line against medical marijuana. Although, technically, I think this was more brought around by the people who were arrested. They tried to challenge really broadly.
They were kind of flaunting it.
Yeah, they really tried to do a broad case where, okay, they had their plant seized, but they sued Attorney General John Ashcroft, asking for the court order letting them smoke, grow, or obtain marijuana without fear of being arrested or having their home raided or any other intrusion by federal authorities, which is kind of a broad sort of thing to request for the federal government to be like, come on. Like, the federal government's going to give up knocking down your door if they want to.
Yeah, and if you were going to challenge a particular administration and a particular attorney general, maybe that's not quite the battle you want to pick right there.
Yeah, not the old cat killer. Wasn't he the one that had, like, this insane fear of calico cats?
Really?
And they were, like, had them removed from... had him, like, killed from around his property.
That's bizarre.
All right, here it was. The two that brought the suit claimed protection under the Constitution, which says Congress may pass laws regulating a state's economic activity so long as it involves interstate commerce that crosses state borders. And they were, of course, saying that they're, you know, they were not only not involved in an economic activity, but they weren't going across state borders, what the federal anti-marijuana.
Yeah, that's why I was confused. So, you know, another thing, I read in the article that I came across last night, one of the Bush administration guys was saying that there's no science that shows that there's any, you know, real pain relief from marijuana. And I was thinking, I maybe I'm off, but I thought I'd read some actual science before about it. And I was wondering if this was kind of like the there's no science that shows that the world is warming kind of thing.
Right. Well, that was Daniel Abramson with the Drug Policy Alliance, who is they're all shills. Come on.
I mean,
we've been figuring it. The FDA just recently, this was a last week's story, they approved this neuron zapping thing that's supposed to help with depression after all the clinical trials showed that it was about the same as the implants that were put in there that weren't actually used, weren't actually turned on. But the things cost $15,000 to install. in somebody. So, of course it gets approved. There's big money there. Problem with marijuana is it's kind of hard to control that by a drug company because you can grow it in your backyard. It's about money. It's not about health. It's not about culture of life. It's not about any of that.
Yeah, that's a big lobby. I mean, that's a group you don't want to mess with in a way.
Yeah. I wish I was a drug lobbyist.
You know,
bank.
Yeah. I met somebody a while back who was actually in, like, the. I guess they had whatever proper training you need to be pharmaceutical in some way or another. And, like, you know, I'm tired of being poor. I think maybe I'll just sell out my ethics and be a lobbyist. Because there's
money.
Yeah. And she was like, you know, there's money there. And I can totally see how somebody goes over to the dark side there.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I have heard it's not the sexy life that people think being a drug lobbyist is. It's not all playing golf and getting, you know, compromising pictures with senators.
There's the occasional racquetball game is there instead.
No, it's a whole bunch of putting pieces of paper in front of a doctor and saying, let me buy you lunch, let me buy you lunch, and having them munch on a sandwich as you rattle on and pay no attention to you. It's really not that exciting. But
yeah, I imagine.
And then there's that whole ethics thing. I'm pushing a drug on kids that's going to make them hyperactive and no apparent reason other than to make some money. But that's okay. That's how we learn, though. See, you know, if they weren't forcing all these drugs through, we wouldn't learn how dangerous they are, and we wouldn't be removing them from the market after and then replacing them once
true.
We changed the law.
Mm.
Hey, guess who I agree with for once?
Oh, no. Oh.
The boob and grabber, Schwarzenegger. He's actually gone ahead and given us some good goals for reducing state emissions and greenhouse gases in Southern California.
Every time he does something climate, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, no doubt. From the, like, multi-Humvee driving owning. I've seen him, because I used to live downtown Sacramento. I've actually seen him cruising around driving two Humvees at the same time.
How does that work?
He just so he could burn more fossil fuels is what I was thinking.
Wow.
Yeah. But, he's got some pretty aggressive reductions that he's scheduled. He's talking about keeping the greenhouse gas levels and emissions in the state of California to the 2000 level by the year 2010. So basically a little bit of regression and no further growth. And then he wants to start reversing the trend.
Was he the one who wanted an 80% reduction by some point?
By 2050.
50,
which is still
okay,
a good long ways away.
Yeah, okay. But still, I mean, you know, that's it's nice at least that somebody's talking about, you know, something kind of extreme. Well, not extreme. That's not extreme.
Well, no, I mean, he made a really simple statement where he says, the debate is over. We know that we have the science. We know the science. We see the threat. It's time to take action now. We must take action on the greenhouse. But this is, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
For an official of government under, aligned with a party, with a president who's the ruling party of the country at the time, who doesn't believe that there's been enough conclusive evidence to show that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's funny because I think in some ways he has more pull in his party than, like, the party leaders. And so I wonder, you know, if there are people out there like, Arnold says there's a problem.
Yeah.
He knows the science.
He's a scientist, isn't he?
Wasn't he in the science Terminator movies?
He was kindergarten cop. I think that might be. But, it's just kind of, it makes me feel less delusional, actually, when you have a president that refutes science on a regular basis. It makes me feel like I'm a real clear thinker. I don't know why that is. Just absolutely, like, anything to do with science, they order another study, they leave the one study that they did on the table. And it's like, that one was inconclusive. I think inconclusive means they didn't finish reading it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm getting tired, you know, of having foreign graduate students come into my lab and spend some time there. And I always have to have the same conversation. You know, I swear, not all Americans are that stupid. You know, but everybody's like, what is up with you guys? Seriously.
It's time to admit it. Most Americans... Luckily, we're from California, so we don't really see it that much.
Yeah.
But most Americans, I mean, that's why we should get rid of democracy. We should create the philosopher king state where we have all the university, academic, all the heads of departments just have a coup. Just take over this country. Let's put it in the hands of the universities, the scientists.
You know, my friends were having an online discussion about this the other day, and they said, you know, people aligned with a party, they can't see straight. It doesn't matter what party. So here's what we do. We have a new constitutional convention, and we let each state pick, you know, one guy from each party and then the 100 highest IQ people from the state.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, you know, we'll have, what, 5,000 high IQ people and 100 party people. And then we just come up with, you know, some guidelines.
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, yeah, and once those guidelines are in place, you have to get rid of the vote because you cannot allow the general public to influence things like this. It was, you know, it worked great when there was just a few of us. We were all like-minded. We were all pioneers. We were all looking for liberty and freedom. We all had that on the mind back in the Founding Father days. But now it's...
Yeah, see, I don't know that I trust those other smart people. I say just make me dictator for life because clearly, I could do a good job.
You know what? I'm one of the few people I know who definitely would refuse dictatorship. I know that I would do a bad job.
Oh yeah,
I would bring this country down faster than it's being brought down now.
Yeah, I don't know. I have this strange feeling that if I were in charge of the country, everybody would suddenly be moving to Mexico, and yet everybody from Europe and Asia would be like, oh, let's go there.
You know, if we did become more of a free and liberal society, I think we would attract some brilliant minds. I think there might be some sort of an exodus going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, shoot, Korea. I mean, we're in a country that has so much technology, so much ability, and yet we're going to completely miss the boat on stem cell research.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole thing in South Korea when they did the thing, Bush's response was, this is exactly the kind of research we're trying to stop. And I read that right after, and I'm sure the journalist did this on purpose, but I read that right after the paragraph where they were talking about how this can lead to cultured organs, you know, where they basically take your own tissue and grow organ replacements for you. I'm thinking, all right.
Yeah, you don't want to destroy some cluster of cells, okay, and in the event that you could save fully formed human beings. I mean, if I was a patriotic young petri dish, you know, I'd be willing to give my all to the betterment of society as a whole to save those fully formed multicellular higher organisms. I think that would be a worthy cause.
Yeah, clearly.
You can send 19-year-olds to... Now we're going to get... See, this isn't This Week in Science. It's turning into This Week in Politics. But you can send 19-year-olds to go die, but you can't do anything to the petri dish.
Okay, so I'll bend it back to science here.
Thank you.
Coming back to something related. But there was a story last week. So, you know, there's a whole thing out of Kansas and the evolution bit. So a lot of the science teachers in the area are saying, you know, the thing that we're seeing now is regardless of what the kid's background is, a lot of the kids in the area, in these states, are being steered away from science. It's not so much that they think science is bogus, but they think it's too controversial and they don't want to get in trouble with their communities for doing science-related things.
Huh.
And so even if they like science, they're still saying, nah, you know, I'm not even going to bother because my neighbors, they're going to be like upset if I'm doing science because everybody's now thinking science is this crazy, horrible thing.
Wow.
And so it's like, so suddenly we're losing a whole generation of kids, at least in the Midwest, of potential scientists, and I don't know. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is so. See, it's gonna sound politicky again.
Oh, yeah.
So American Taliban, though. It just is. It is so. Religion, I have a problem with religion, but not other people's.
So this came up on France's show on Monday on It's About You, and we're talking about like the so-called competition between scientists and religion. You know, there's really no competition. Like, a lot of really smart religious scientists have basically said, science is just figuring out how God's tools work. You know, we're not trying to, you know, dispute God, disprove God, anything like that. Science and God, they really get along pretty well. Like, God made science,
right.
You know? So, they really, there's no reason they can't play nicely.
Right. Now, me, I happen to be an atheist.
Yeah.
So, I do believe that science has disproved God. If other people want to believe what they want to believe, that's fine. That's their own deal. And there's a whole different argument there. But I really don't think that science should go into the church and tell the church what they can and cannot teach about their religion, about their God. I think that would be so inappropriate.
That would
have people with axe handles running down the street, knocking in windows. And yet, the reverse is done towards science. Some shrugging. It's the Midwest. What do you expect? So.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm sitting over here in my seat shrugging. What do you do?
Oy vey.
Yeah, so other science. So I'll shift us 180 degrees here, and here's a story we were talking about before the show. There's a guy in Israel who's developed a way to separate oxygen out of water, and it's in a scuba size thing. So instead of having to take down these compressed air tanks with you, so how's this for a distraction? So instead of having to take down compressed air tanks with you, you basically just take down this device, and it can extract the gas from the seawater. And what it's doing isn't anything crazy chemical or anything like that. It's actually pretty clever. So the idea is that the higher pressure you put a liquid under, the more gas it can hold. And so, by converse, the lower pressure the liquid is under, the less gas it holds. And so if it's holding a bunch of gas and you put it under lower pressure, the gas has to come out. I'm sure I'm kind of twisting things a little bit. But basically, he's built a centrifuge to treat seawater, a little centrifuge you wear on your back, essentially.
Wow.
I know I'm butchering the description of it here, but basically it pulls oxygen and other gases out of the seawater so that, the person can breathe it. I'm sure for deep diving that doesn't work because you have to have different mixes of things and whatnot, but this is pretty cool anyway.
It's a size that can fit with what would normally be a scuba tank. Then.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Now, they don't have an actual picture of a working prototype, so I don't know if it's just an idea or a patent or if he's got something but he doesn't want to show journalists yet or what.
Well, no, because he wants to corner the market on underwater housing.
Well, I would if I were in his shoes.
But I wouldn't make them out of a giant glass bubble roof. I have a feeling that would end badly.
Yeah, I think so.
But that would be really neat because that would really give you, at least at certain depths, an unlimited amount of time to stay down. And
that's really cool. And presumably there's got to be other gases than oxygen in the water. Maybe you can get your nitrogen and other gases that you need out of there. And I'm completely ignorant on deep water diving, so I don't know.
Well, I intend to remain so. I saw a movie called Open Water where some divers went down and they came up and the boat was gone.
Man.
They were forgotten about, left out in the middle of the, somewhere down there off the coast of Australia.
Do you think that was the scuba industry got together and said, you know what, we've got too many tourists, how can we scare some away?
No, but you know what? The Australians did come out with a negative ad campaign or negative slur sort of campaign that tried to establish that the couple did it intentionally, that they committed suicide out there in the middle of the ocean, which was absolutely found to be completely bogus. But yeah, they didn't like the fact that they lost. They let it happens. It happens pretty often, actually. A few times a year, you go out on a boat in the middle of some nice reef area. Divers go in, 20 of them go in, 18 of them come up, boat heads back to shore. Some people pop up.
I think, though, usually the operators are like, wait, hold on. We're missing somebody. Let's go back.
Yeah, well, I guess they've come up with some new policies. Like, you take your ID, you post it up there at the front of the boat and tell everybody's taking their ID down. They don't, little tricks and things like that. Might help.
Man. Fun. Let's see. I have something water-related to follow up on that. It's kind of cool. So there was a story in New Scientist this week about dolphins teaching their young how to use tools. So I don't understand entirely the context of it, but basically sponges come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes, sea sponges. Dolphins have figured out, certain dolphins, like primarily female dolphins, have figured out that instead of getting the flat sponges, if they get these kind of conical sponges, they can push it around on their nose. And when they're foraging or scavenging for things, they can have the sponge on their nose as kind of like a protector so they don't get cut and damaged and whatnot.
A little nose guard for
bottom
feeding.
Yeah, and these scientists found that, you know, there's a certain percentage of dolphins that go out and use these tools, and they were trying to figure out, like, you know, is it genetic? You know, how's it done? And so they actually compared the genes of the dolphins that were doing it, and found out, you know, there's no genetic basis to it. It's entirely taught. You know, these dolphins are teaching their young how to go, you know, pick just the right sponges and how to use it so they don't lose the sponge and all that. And that's pretty cool.
Right, because unlike a lot of animals, they actually have a long period with the children, mothers and the children. It's like a 4-year period, something like that, where they're right there next to each other. And so it's just by observation, and it's mostly females, because I guess the guys usually will take off, and they have sort of different foraging routines,
like weekends out.
Yeah, go out with the boys, go watch some turtle sports or something. But that's pretty amazing tool use with dolphins.
You know, and that should totally, you know, put the so there to all the people say, ah, well, you know, opposable thumbs. You know, that's what lets us use tools.
And on top of that, sonar. Come on, they got more senses.
Yeah, really.
I want sonar. I wish I could develop that.
That'd be pretty nice.
That'd be cool.
You get weird looks in the pool, like, Tommy is making those loud pings again.
Oh, we're running out of Arctic water.
Oh, hey,
are we at the break?
Yeah, we're at the break. So
okay,
so
let's
we should
hit the break. We'll go back to Arctic water in a minute.
Okay, we'll play some announcements. All right, here we go.
And we're back with This Week in Science. You are listening to KDVS 90.3 in Davis.
And if you want to call in, the phone number here in the studio is 752-2777. We always use that number. I'm not entirely sure why, but I like to be a little contrary and just call out the other number. So our other number here is 754-KDVS. And, of course, both of those are area code 530 in case, you know, you're in Madagascar listening to the online stream.
Yeah, and if you're listening online, I don't know if you can. I wonder if they're listening online. They're not listening right now. They're listening later.
You know, I think France has actually gotten a call from somebody who was listening online and some long way away.
Wow. So. Oh, actually, no. I guess with the streaming, it would be just about right away. Wow.
Yeah. Actually, some guy from Bombay emailed in and said, "Hey, you know, I really like this music you played to some show." I think it was like for Saul's Tango, but I don't know. That's pretty cool. Some guy in Bombay.
So you want to plug your show? You got your own show on KDVS.
Wow, I hadn't even thought. So you know, for those people who happen to be awake and about and you know, want to listen to whatnot on the radio on Friday mornings at 8:30, I've got a show called Policy for Geeks. And basically, we just talk about law and policy issues relating to technology. And every week, I usually have a theme. This week, I'm doing aerospace stuff, you know, so talking about NASA, Boeing, Airbus, you know, and all the shenanigans everybody's getting up to lately. Nice. But yeah, so it's good times and it's fun, and I'm happy to receive calls. So you know,
which we're getting one of right now. Hello, caller. You're on the air with This Week in Science.
Are you sure it's not Last Week in Science?
Some of it is.
I'm listening to you online, so is this last week's show?
This might be. Actually, this might even be next week's show. I'm being informed that our streaming is actually so fast.
Well, I wonder if that's why I'm feeling kind of stretched right now, like over 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're actually pioneering with relativistic streaming.
Yeah.
Ooh, that feels nasty.
Oh, you don't know the half of it.
Show me the other one, then.
Uh-oh. All right.
That took a real dive in the gutter real quick. Okay, you know, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think there is a short delay. And I think your scientist people are right.
About the
About the delay thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you know, and there should be. It's actually one of my favorite things to do is I had this place where I'd go and watch sporting events, and one would be on broadcast and one would be by satellite.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I can't remember which one was the one that was getting there quicker. But
that's interesting.
But yeah, you'd see a great shot, and then you'd look over to the other TV because you could see it again like a couple seconds later.
Yeah, it's nice.
Kinda fun.
Yeah, I think I went to that too. I think during the World Cup, depending on which station a particular game was on.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. That's beyond me. I can barely toast two pieces of bread at one time.
So you just need a bigger toaster. It's all, you don't have to try to do it yourself.
Science can handle this problem.
Yeah, you're sitting there over to open flame with two pieces of bread, and one gets hot and you want to drop it, but the other one's not done yet. Just get yourself more technology. A toaster.
Okay. Yeah, that maybe I just get someone to do it for me.
That's my take on all of technology. Have somebody do it for me or invent something else that does it for me so that they don't have to bother with it anymore.
And make it non-polluting.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think I wasted enough of your time.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, later.
All right, so what's next on the lineup?
Well, this week in the end of the world, I'm so tired of talking about global warming. I really am. But
Global what's this?
Global warming. It's this new thing that's just a hypothesis right now. But this is out of...
It was colder this morning than it has been, so I don't think global warming's real, because shouldn't it have been warmer this morning?
Actually, global warming's also supposed to make it colder at other times. It's all kind of confusing, but researchers out of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and University of California Los Angeles have done a study where they compared satellite photographs taken of Siberia in the 1970s with photographs from current day.
Hmm.
And what they're finding is they found two things. One they expected, which was...
bigger mosquitoes.
Less ice.
Oh.
Okay. Much bigger mosquitoes. No, they found less ice, which they were sort of expecting because of, this evidence of global warming and melting ice caps and this sort of thing. But what they didn't really expect was there to be less water. So what's happening is a lot of these, what would be little frozen lakes... yeah. Aren't just melting, but then the water is disappearing altogether. They sort of expected there to still be accumulation of water in these areas, of melted water, but they're finding that it's disappearing.
So what are they talking about, like the Gobi Desert expanding or something? Or
well, what they're talking about is maybe a number of countries becoming underwater in the next 50 years or so.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like I think they've already who's the country with is it the Netherlands with the dikes and the things with the Dutch are kind of giving up on the whole we're gonna hold back the water with these dams thing anymore, and they're looking at ways of possibly even raising the level of importing dirt and trying to raise portions of the country.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm certainly not a expert in the whole importing dirt field, but that seems sketchy.
Yeah. It I'm sure it is.
I mean, I'm sure to them the whole idea of being underwater seems even sketchier.
yeah.
So.
Well, actually, they did it to Sacramento, California, is a nice 11-mile jaunt across a beautiful causeway from here. And if you've ever been to downtown Sacramento, you've probably noticed, or the Old Town Sacramento portion of it, you've probably noticed that between some of the alleyways there, the street level drops down about 16 feet. And now, that's actually the old street level of Sacramento.
Really?
Yeah. And they went and raised the entire city, the entire downtown area, through the area where the Capitol is, even. They raised everything about 12 to 16 feet.
Wow.
Because of flooding.
Huh.
And it was too important a hub with the railroads and everything that just to abandon and build over somewhere else. So, yeah, and it's really neat. Like, every once in a while, an old building or something burns down and they have to demolish it in downtown Sac. And if you go there and check out once they've excavated that burnt-out building, you'll see another floor of archways and entrances that are below street level.
Wow, when did they do this?
It must have been quite some time ago. I don't recall, but I believe it was probably in the early 1900s.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's actually catacombs underneath that link a lot of the downtown areas together. Because when they built everything up, they actually kept a lot of the buildings that were underneath. Just the bottom floor is basically intact, and even did some tunneling between them.
So that's dangerous to say stuff like that, because now, like every D&D player in Sacramento is going to be like, wait, dude, check it out. We can go like play under the city.
They already know. They're down there. No, there are. There's people down there. Like if you go down to the Tower Theater, you can, if you go through, they've got it all gated off and everything, but if you go into the basement of the Tower Theater, there's actually catacombs you can take that will bring you up in the Masonic building, shoot, what is that, about 17 blocks away.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And there's this whole culture of people that live down there. It's really creepy because, like, it's all behind these, like, old iron gates and stuff that they locked everything off of because they didn't want people tooling around in there.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, cats and stuff that live down there. And occasionally you'll see, like, somebody's left saucers of milk out from the inside, from the wrong side of the grate. Right? So there's people that live underneath Sacramento. There's a whole population of probably can't – they all have very pale skin and can't stand the light and –
The truth behind Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, but they're actually, you would expect them to all dress very gothy, but no. They're not. No, because they all moved down there in the mid-80s. They're all very vibrant colors.
I wonder if that's like the environmental lobbyists. You know, like not as much as the pharmaceutical lobbyists, not as much money there, but they still want to live downtown. And,
yeah. cheap rent. I live underground for cheap rent about now. Yeah. So on your other show... On your show, you do a lot of stuff with NASA. So this is a big week for NASA.
Oh, every week lately has been a big week for NASA.
Well, they just got a chip shot out of the sand.
That's nice.
Got the Mars rover out again.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think, you know, and this is entirely fiction, but I just played this little scenario in my head of some intern, you know, who initially got it stuck in the sand. He's like, I am so saved now.
Wow.
But yeah, that's really cool.
It's just awesome that we can get stuck in the sand on a different planet and get ourselves out again.
Yeah,
and without having to call AAA or have any, you know.
Yeah. Although the downside to the story is that, you know, all the people who were saying, like, you know, we need manned missions because we can't do this stuff with robots. Mm-hmm. These people are like,
yeah, no, we don't need men anymore. We just need robots. More robots.
Some robot from the future is listening to the show. Yes.
Now, usually, most weeks, we do a bit on this Week in Science, which is This Week in Science History, where we'll profile either an inventor or an event or a series of things and stuff that just happened in science and history. And this week, I've got an inventor who, really, this is probably one of the most popular inventions of all time, one of the most used inventions of all time. And it was invented in 1910 by a 19-year-old girl, Mary Phelps Jacob.
I am completely lost. I can't even begin to think what it would be.
What did this 19-year-old girl invent in 1910 that is all over the place? It's used in just about 50% of the population in this country.
I'm stumped.
Okay. Well, let's see if you'll catch on as this comes along here. Mary Phelps Jacob had just purchased a sheer evening gown for one of her social events. At the time, the only acceptable undergarment was a corset that was stiffened with whalebone. Polly found that the whalebones visibly poked out around the plunging neckline of her sheer fabric dress, and dissatisfied, she worked with her maid to fashion two silk handkerchiefs together with some pink ribbon and cord, and the bra was invented.
Big day in science.
Big day in science, definitely. Big day in inventions, because this thing kind of took off. I mean, that was 1910. It's hard to imagine 1910,
yeah.
And there's no bras. But
you got to think by 1911, everyone's like, man, what were we thinking before?
Yeah, and actually, it was a little after. Mostly credited with the widespread use of the bra was actually World War I.
Really?
Okay. Because check this out: World War I comes along, and because we're asking people to donate every single little scrap of metal that they possibly can, there's a lot of metal made up in the corsets that they
were
using
to
keep all keep women with their shapely shape. They got enough metal freed up from the corsets for the war production, 28,000 tons of metal, in fact, which was enough to build two battleships.
You got to think, too, that during that time, women were moving faster because that's 28 tons less metal on your body.
Yeah. That's a lot of, they were putting on a lot of weight with those things.
Man.
So I was, after World War II, I mean, everybody switched over, started using these brassieres. Now, it would be another number of years, wouldn't be until the 20s, that a Russian immigrant named Ida Rosenthal noticed that all bras were being made in one size, and yet all breastises were not.
So I would have thought that that would have been like 1910 and a half.
Yeah, natural, right? Yeah.
It's wow.
Different sizes, so you'd make different. Well, I guess they were just, you know, you had a drawstring or something. You just tie it off to all wherever right, you yeah. tied it off. But, you know, I guess the 20s with the flappers and everything, they, you know, were doing a lot more moving. A lot more moving, yeah. Needed something to help them stay in those flapper dresses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, when you first said, you know, you do a historical bit on science. My first thought was, you know, how can you not do Nikola Tesla every week?
Oh.
But this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I did Nikola Tesla the first week, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. he is my favorite scientist of all time.
He's pretty much like the science fiction scientist.
Yeah.
But anyway.
My favorite is when Tesla and Edison were starting to monkey around with microwaves. Because Edison actually pretty much blinded himself. Using microwave, like, you know, he was trying to, I don't know,
yeah,
you know, because you have this new invention, you don't know what it does, you know, you just mess around with it, see if you can give yourself x-ray vision or something.
Yeah, you know, Edison was a mean old guy.
He was bad.
I wonder if that made him meaner.
Being blinded
by your own technology. I mean, seriously, like, that's blinded by science.
Yeah.
Just pretty much, you know.
But, you know, I kind of think that that's just, for somebody who didn't understand the science and basically hired other people who were brilliant scientists
yeah.
to come up with the science for him, because most of his inventions, he didn't invent too much of.
Yeah.
He had all these underlings that were working in
science. Now, he understood business and he understood public psychology.
Right.
I mean, after all, he invented the electric chair
yep.
to show that his opponent's technology was dangerous. I mean, man.
Oh, yeah. But my favorite part of that whole story, too, is there was this Coney Island elephant named Topsy. And they electrocuted this elephant in a public square and filmed it and sent it all across the country as a negative. It was the first really dirty negative ad campaign on film.
Man, I mean, just imagine today somebody trying that. You couldn't even, like... No network would touch that. No magazine would touch that. Like, you'd get some internet sites that would put it up, and you'd get, like, a lot of people seeing it that way. But that's about it.
Yeah. I guess I could use a negative ad campaign if they wanted to go after medical marijuana. I'd volunteer for that.
Hmm.
Get a whole bunch of people stoned and film them.
Yeah. This is the counter argument.
Yeah. Dude, I'm...
Does this look like a cure to you?
I need some more chips. Maybe some water. I'm getting thirsty. I guess that wouldn't be that dramatic, would it?
No.
Well, we're closing in towards the end of the show here. We've got one big... You had this story on the... do you have the story on the virus vaccine?
Oh,
this is pretty big.
Yeah, I've got this here. So I didn't read this in a lot of detail, but it's very big. I mean, a lot of monkeys out there very happy today, and hopefully humans will be happy soon.
A vaccine for some of the big ones, from the big viruses, Marburg and Ebola. Which are pretty much unsurvivable.
Yeah.
Those are kind of things you get that and you're
what is done. It, like a 90% rate on those or something?
Well, you know, it says here that the 100% chance of dying. Well, 100% chance of dying.
So,
but you don't necessarily die from it because people do survive, but not very many.
Yeah, here I've got it says both cause horrific bleeding and are lethal in up to 90% of cases. There's no vaccine or cure, except now.
And now they're saying if this translates into human use, which what it's doing in the monkeys, it is going to be an 80% chance of survival. So not just the 80, it's not just taking 10 off the death rate. It's 80% chance of survival, which is pretty huge. There's around, the average is in like, where is this? In Angola, about 400 people contracted the disease and died as of May. They didn't say when that started, though. So is that up to date? No.
I don't know.
Anyway, but that's still pretty amazing. And it's just, we can get rid of Ebola. Now we can use it, because this is actually all this research for the vaccine was by the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute. So now that we can be vaccinated from it, we can use it as a weapon.
Shut up. Don't say that. Can we bleep the last 10 seconds?
No, it's all right. Department of Defense does not monitor this show.
Yeah, probably.
No, they don't. They don't. If so, I had been gone. I'd have been vanished a long time ago.
I'm picturing some group in the Pentagon sitting around a table tuned in like, oh, they're on to us.
All right, we have reached the end of yet another This Week in Science. Thanks to Eric, who has engineered the show today, kept us on the air, got us off the air when we needed to, brought us back on when we needed to. It's just a bunch of flashing lights to me.
Just by the skin of our teeth.
So thank you, Eric, for coming in today, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Science. I should have let you cue that up first, huh?
No, it's okay. Here we are.